good afternoon. Welcome AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Doug Padgett in Drive Time, 4 to 5 o'clock. And I'm really excited about my conversation here right at the top of the hour with Melanie Adams. Melanie is the, I'm going to get your title right here, Melanie, because it's awesome. The Senior Director of Guest Experience and Educational Services for the Minnesota Historic Society. Is that right?
That is correct.
Well, what a job. And well, Melanie, thanks for being on, because what turned me to this and made this so interesting is that over at Fort Snelling, on Saturday, there's going to be a particular event going on with a historian named Joseph McGill, who's a lecturer and is going to sleep at Fort Snelling. And we can talk more about that in a minute about why he's going to be sleeping there. It's called the Slave Dwelling, and some of the history of Fort Snelling. But I just want to talk for a bit about the fact that you're a historian, or you work for the Minnesota Historic Society, and they do programming at Fort Snelling. A thing I've lived here almost my entire life. I had 2 long years in Texas when I had to do 2 long in Texas. But other than that, I didn't have any idea there was Minnesota Historic Society programming at Fort Snelling.
Yeah, we have a wonderful array of programs on a daily basis. So visitors can come by during our open hours, and there are wonderful experiences where we talk not only about the story of slavery at the fort, but we talk about the fort as a military space, and we talk about the different soldiers' stories that would have happened there, as well as the story of Japanese Americans and Native Americans. So that's one of the really nice things. At Fort Snelling, there are a variety of different stories that could be told that really help to relate to the people of Minnesota.
Now, do you think part of the reason that I don't know about this is because, I don't know, all of those storylines that you mentioned there feel like the kinds of stories that, I don't know, people like don't feel excited to talk about. Like, they all have a dark history to them and a dark part. Do you think that's partly why somebody, you know, in their 50s that grows up in the Twin Cities and didn't hear about programming or what the history of Fort Snelling?
Right. And I think really what we're trying to get across, and I understand what you're saying. People may think of a lot of these things as difficult topics, but when you look at the story of enslaved individuals at Fort Snelling, we're also going to be talking about the advocacy and agency of enslaved people. So when we're talking about Dred and Harriet Scott, we'll be talking about how they met and married there, but then we're also spending time talking about how they sued for their freedom. And so we talk about the landmark case of Dred Scott. And so it really is more, I can understand why people would say, oh, well, they'll feel bad. But a lot of these stories really talk about the daily experiences and the agency and really the lives of these individuals, because you have to think about the diverse visitors that we hope to attract to the site. And so they really want to see themselves and their history represented at the site as well.
Yeah, well, see, that's the advocacy of someone who's the Senior Director of Guest Experiences and Educational Services, because it helps us to understand that even though there's these hard parts of our history, that there's reasons we would tell those stories, because in the midst of all of that, there's the kind of hope that we might need to find in our day to also
exactly.
make it through. Can you give just a bit of background of Fort Snelling? I mean, a lot of us drive by it if you're going out to the airport or driving to Mandota Heights or something. But other than that, and seeing, you know, this big ominous building there, what was it? Why is it there?
So Fort Snelling is an outpost. It was originally built in 1820, and it was the furthest most outpost where it was built at what is called Bedote, which is the confluence of the rivers. So it's really important as a specific site because it was placed on the river. And it was a military encampment. That is what it originally was put there for, and functioned from the 1820s up until World War II. And so a lot of what you'll hear, we'll hear from some of our older visitors, were relatives who had mustered out of that, of the fort, if that makes sense. And so that's why it's really important for us to be able to expand the stories that are told there beyond the 1820s, because we really wanted to be able to talk about veterans. We want to be able to talk about veterans not only from the Civil War, World War I, World War II, but more current-day veterans so we can make those connections. So in addition to talking about the fort as being a military space, the diversity of the stories become in there because we're talking about the different people that also would have called the space home and interacted with the soldiers and the men that were at the fort. And so that's how we're able to bring in the story of Dred and Harriet Scott and other enslaved people. The Military Language School, which has been a really popular story for us this summer, and that's another new one, so I'm not sure how much you know about that. But that is Japanese Americans who helped the U.S. during World War II.
Really?
And that's a really important story that we're able to tell now because we've expanded the range of stories that we tell at the site, as well as the story of the Dakota Native Americans who lived on the site before the fort was even a fort, or before the fort was there.
So this Saturday, there's a program that sounds like it's really exciting. It's called the Slave Dwelling Project. And the story, as I read it, is that the lecturer who is coming, Joseph McGill, will perform a lecture about what happened there at that fort, and then sleeps overnight in the fort. And this is part of what Joseph McGill is doing to raise awareness of the places in the United States, and especially outside of the South, where enslaved people were kept and were held. So that's a fascinating piece of history of our Fort Snelling up here in the North.
Yes, and I think when we look at the work of Joseph McGill, so he'll actually be doing two programs. The first one on Saturday is at 2:00, and that is specifically a presentation and discussion about his project, the Slave Dwelling Project. And then later that evening at 7:00, we'll do a tour which talks more specifically about slavery at the fort, and then a continued discussion with Joseph McGill. But I think it is really interesting. One of the things he emphasizes when he visits and sleeps in these slave quarters is really the importance of the history, because he really first started doing this because on a lot of plantations, he'll say, they spent a lot of time fixing up the big house and making sure it had the furnishings. So when people would, when they would do these tours, they were so focused on where the owners would have been that they did not really do much with where the enslaved people would have slept or lived.
Right.
And so by sleeping in the enslaved individuals' quarters, he's really hoping to call attention to that experience. Mm-hmm. And I think especially here in Minnesota, I really loved your point about distinguishing between the North and the South. And I think so many people have a different concept of slavery in the North versus the South. And that's really one of the things that we talk about at Fort Snelling, and he does as well, is whether you were enslaved North or South of the Mason-Dixon line, it's still the same thing. And I think sometimes people confuse enslaved people with the work they were doing and not really the agency or lack of agency that they would have had as an enslaved person.
Wow, that's really helpful. So why were there enslaved people being held in this fort, in this military fort, in Minnesota in the 1820s, 30s, 40s?
Great question, and that's one of the first ones we address when we talk about slavery at the fort. The main reason there were enslaved individuals at the fort was because it was a military fort. Because as you know, Minnesota was a free state. And
yes,
so there was not slavery outside of the walls of the fort. Southern officers were allowed to bring their enslaved individuals with them while they were serving at Fort Snelling. And so that is why there was slavery at the fort.
Because the Southern slave owners who were high enough ranking were allowed to bring their slaves. That I guess that's part of the complicity of Northern states that I didn't realize that, because I was under the impression that if slaves, and maybe you don't know all the slave history here of the North, but Minnesota wasn't even a state at that point, right? It was
correct.
This was before statehood. So these enslaved peoples didn't have any way to any group of people to make an appeal to, huh? The federal government or anyone else to try to find their freedom.
Well, and I think, though, this is why the Dred Scott case is so important. And I think a lot of people assume that Dred Scott was the only individual that sued for his freedom. And by the time Dred Scott sued for his freedom in St. Louis, there were at least 100, if not more, what are called freedom suits. So enslaved people suing for their freedom was not uncommon. I'm not going to say it was common, but it was not uncommon. There were hundreds before Dred Scott did. But I think the difference is really, like you were saying, that people are surprised that it happened in Minnesota, especially before statehood. And the reason why we know that really is because of the research and the documentation and working with public historians, to be able to find out the names of the enslaved people. We were able to do an exhibit, a prototype exhibit, last summer that really was able to help us name the 30 to 40 individuals who were enslaved at the fort. And this was because that they actually, they were able to get reimbursed from the federal government for their enslaved individuals. And so there were receipts.
Okay, can you hold on and we can talk about this when we come back over the break? Because historians, so exciting, so much fun. That's Melanie Adams from the Minnesota Historic Society, and we'll tell you more about the details of what's going on at Fort Snelling here on Saturday. But this is AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Doug Padgett, in here at Drive Time. Stick with us over the break.
Down in mine, the bus stop to pick up.
The fine folks at Common Good Books will help you find the perfect book for you or the book lover in your life. Find a huge selection from a locally owned and independent bookseller in the Twin Cities. They are always bringing in top authors from around the globe for special in-store events. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Find Common Good Books at 38 South Snelling Avenue in St. Paul or shop online at commongoodbooks.com.
Hi, this is Ken Hagland, host of the Minnesota Hospice and Healthcare Show, your source for elder care and caregiver information, inviting you to listen to our live call-in show airing Saturdays from noon to 1. On my next show, I will be talking with Karen Lawrence, president of Matrix Home Healthcare Specialists, about several topics including in-home healthcare and healthcare management services. Please join us this Saturday from noon to 1 for the new Minnesota Hospice and Healthcare Show and learn more about us at minnesotahospice.com.
Located just north of 50th and France, the Great Wall Restaurant has provided a delicious taste of authentic Chinese cuisine since 1981. Specializing in Sichuan and Peking dishes, they offer one of the most extensive menus in the Twin Cities. Favorites include hot and sour soup, pan-fried dumplings, and mushu pork with homemade Chinese pancakes. Stop by their Edina location or call for takeout at 952-927-4439. See the full menu at greatwallrestaurant.us.
The lowest prices on the best bathrooms are at the Home Depot Summer Kitchen and Bath event. Update your bathroom with your choice of exclusive Moen and faucets that won't open the tap on your budget. Hensley and Darcy bath faucets in spot resist brushed nickel finish are just $79 a piece. A better bathroom starts with a lower price, and it all starts at the Summer Kitchen and Bath event, only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Valid through September 19th while supplies last.
Hi, this is Kirk Duckwell with the House Geeks Real Estate Show on AM 950, sponsored by Bricks Real Estate. If you're thinking of selling your home, check us out at housegeeks.com. With over 250 sales last year, we would love to help you sell your home too. Contact us today and see how our listings sell faster and for up to 8.9% more than the Twin Cities market average, potentially netting you thousands more in your pocket. Again, go to housegeeks.com today.
This is Pat with PJW Automotive. How do you choose an automotive repair shop? I bet you look for quality and dependability. You want someone you can trust to do the job right the first time. It saves you money and hassle because you're not coming back over and over again. My team of top-notch automotive specialists knows vehicles inside and out, and I guarantee it's worth the drive to PJW Automotive. One exit north of 694 on 35W and online at pjwauto.com.
Hey, welcome back to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Doug Padgett in here, Drive Time, talking with Melanie Adams from the Minnesota Historic Society. She directs guest experiences and educational services, and I'm having a little guest experience and educational service right here myself. Melanie, just before we went into that important set of commercial breaks, you were saying that part of the way that historians know that slaves were held and kept as a property of United States military soldiers from the South at our very own Fort Snelling here in Minnesota in the North is from finding, did you say receipts
that right,
show
because
that
the they got,
federal government?
The men were reimbursed for their enslaved individuals. And so we had worked with a retired attorney and historian, Walt Bachman, and he was able to help research and find a lot of those receipts. And so that is what some of that, some of our research is based on, because that's how you're able to find out the names of the individuals who were at the fort during that period.
I mean, it's kind of incredible. I know you get probably deal with this a lot as a historian, but but it must feel like time travel in some way that you're going back and all of a sudden these whole new stories are coming to life in your imagination, and as you're reading these reports or receipts that you find or logs or something that could seem so stale, it's kind of amazing, huh?
Well, it really does, though, help bring the history to life, and it really is a lot of great aha moments when you find that documentation or that specific story, or you're able to make those connections in a way that then you're able to share that information with visitors. And I think, you know, what I'm hearing from you is really a lot of the reaction that we get from our visitors. And our goal is to make them want to know more. So I always say we want to leave people with more questions than answers. So after they visit the fort or any of our historic sites, we hope we've helped them, we've piqued their interest in at least one of the stories, and they really want to learn more about it.
Well, I'm not sure what my Saturday entails, but I can imagine me biking over there because it's a fun place to ride a bike and to maybe stop in on Saturday at 2 o'clock. That's where there's a presentation, the Slave Dwelling Project presentation. And then you said at 7 o'clock, there's a tour.
Yes,
which gets
we're going to have a tour and then
detail.
A further discussion with Joseph McGill.
What else do you have going on at the Minnesota Historic Society that people should keep their eyes peeled for or add into their summer schedules?
Right. Well, we have a lot of great things going on any time of year, but also looking at sticking with Fort Snelling. Every Saturday, there is something exciting going on there. As you mentioned, Slave Dwelling Project this Saturday. But next Saturday, we actually have a film screening and discussion called Beyond the Barbed Wire, which is a documentary film about Japanese Americans coming to Minnesota around World War II. So that's in conjunction with an exhibit we have also about Japanese Americans called Courage and Compassion, Our Shared Story of the Japanese American World War II Experience. So again, that continues to look at the military service of Japanese Americans, and then followed by our ever-popular World War I Centennial Weekend. So
right,
there are
that,
lots
that's
of great things
kind of
going
thing,
on in August at Fort Snelling and any of our 26 sites.
Yeah, those see the military salutes are more the kinds of things that I guess I've always imagined are what go on over there at Fort Snelling. I didn't know that there were these other programming that you're doing. It's just it's another one of those great treasures that makes this this state of Minnesota such a little gem and such an important thing. I can't imagine how you historians and people that spend so much time thinking about the implications of the past are possibly thinking about our current political situation in the United States these days. It must be you must have a whole other eye on how people are going to look back on these days and understand what's happening in our world.
And I think one of the things to answer that question, we're really looking at relevancy. So we look at how can we make these events in the past, whether it is Dred and Harriet Scott, whether it is military or Japanese Americans, but how can we connect them to what's happening in today's world for our visitors and really give them a historical context for the for the future of events or what's happening now. So we really focus on the historical events, putting them in context, and how do we make them relevant for today's visitors.
Yeah, well, that's great work, Melanie. I appreciate all that work. Where all of us are trying to do that with things that are happening right now in our lives, and that seems difficult to be able to do it over the span of 200 years is that's some kind of wizardry that you're able to do that. Well, thank you, Melanie. Appreciate it so much having you on, and I hope people will come out and take some time, especially this Saturday or any of the times, to see that great historic programming that's going on. It's part of the important education and understanding our society and our state. So thanks again for being on the show.
Great. Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye-bye now. Hey, friends, just another one of those examples about all the things that go on in the conversations that we have. There's conversations happening in our society right now about how people of African heritage and race and whose families were brought to the United States as a part of the slave trade. And it's something that I didn't know. I guess I knew that I knew the story of Dred Scott. And frankly, that was mostly because there's a set of softball fields over in Bloomington. So that's how I first heard the name. I wasn't either paying attention in school when they talked about that. I had to look it up as a near-on adult. But the idea that our own government of this United States of America was allowing slaves to be held and reimbursed for as if they were some kind of an expense right there in our very own Fort Snelling, right over by the airport, right off that beautiful river. That's the kind of thing that is good for us to remember as we try to seek out the kind of progressive world that we want to have and politics that we have. It's been really broken for a very long time for all of us. And these histories need to be told, and they need to be told in ways that are meaningful. So I'm going to do what I can to get over there on Saturday, 2:00. Maybe you will too. I would love to see this presentation that goes on, and someone who's traveled around the country to different historic sites to raise awareness about the fact that people were held as property in our very own state. And that doesn't even begin to raise the issues around why there was a fort there in the first place, as Melanie reminds us, that the fort was there for a whole number of reasons that had to do with taking the land from the indigenous peoples. So we have these big monuments that are there, and sometimes it's easy to only see them in our current day conversations about military and about war. But there's something bigger going on, and it's a part of a much larger story. And all of us are living in those larger stories right now. We're living inside of a story that in 50 years and 100 years, people are going to look back on, and they're going to refer to this period of time as, you know, the early 2000s in 2018. They're going to be asking questions about how people lived right now and how they could stand for it. And they can look back as we would look back over 150 years or 100 years and say, well, they must have had some kind of a different ethic to put up with that. Well, not all the time. There were people who were opposed to slavery all the time, everywhere in this country. And I'm sure there were people in the military that were opposed to it there. So it's a reminder that people will look back on our period of time and ask, how did we view the world that we're living in? Did we just accommodate to the norms of the governmental powers? Or are we trying to create a more perfect union, trying to create a more common good for all of us, which is hope is what you're doing. In fact, some of that is we have to think about our land. So we're going to be joined by Steve Morse from the Minnesota Environmental Partnership here after the break. But I'm Doug Padgett on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Stick with me. We'll be back here after the break.
This is Lori Swanson. Minnesota is a special place. As your attorney general, I've stood up to powerful interests to keep it that way.
Lori Swanson.
From taking on drug companies that inflated prices and forcing a corporate polluter to clean up our drinking water, to taking on Donald Trump as he attacks what we value most as Minnesotans. Now I'm running for governor because there's too much at stake to let Donald Trump and the special interests push policies that hurt our state.
Swanson for governor.
As governor, I'll continue to defend health care for everyone, and I'll lower the cost of health care and prescription drugs. I'll work to keep our kids safe in school and defend our schools against drastic cuts that jeopardize our kids' futures and our state's economy. I've been proud to be your Attorney General, and as your governor, I'll keep standing up for what's right and get things done for Minnesota.
Lori Swanson for Governor.
Prepared and paid for by Swanson for Governor.
Saturdays at 1 p.m., you have a chance at a fresh start, a new beginning. Hi, everybody. This is Freddie Bell, host of New Beginnings. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, spirituality, and even entertainment. Every day is a chance for a fresh start. Join us Saturdays at 1 p.m. for New Beginnings with Freddie Bell on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Finding the best foods the Twin Cities has to offer is easy with EatLocalMinnesota.com. Offering the top local and independently owned restaurants, EatLocalMinnesota.com has everything from burger joints to cocktails and fine dining. Join the Seward Co-op Creamery Cafe for seasonal dishes using locally sourced ingredients, Minnesota craft beers, and organic wines on the new outdoor patio. Their delicious vegetarian, vegan, and omnivorous menu options are sure to satisfy. Sustaining a healthy community, find Seward Co-op Creamery Cafe at 2601 East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis and online at coopcreamery.coop. The Bad Waitress at 700 Central in Northeast Minneapolis is a bit more grown up than its sister on Nicollet. The Northeast location's finer diner vibe offers craft cocktails from a full bar and an innovative new dinner menu. Still committed to supporting local purveyors and serving organic whenever possible. See the Northeast menu at thebadwaitress.com.
I'm Steve Conklin.
And I'm Jake DeRoff.
We're the hosts of the Mortgage Talk Show, Sundays at 12:30.
Every week we bring you insights on home financing, discussing rates, programs, local and national news.
Whether you're buying your first home or your 100th home, we have tips and inside information to save you money and feel like a mortgage master.
Check us out for more information and email us any questions at mortgagetalkshow.com.
Tune in to the Mortgage Talk Show every Sunday at 12:30 on AM 950.
With your AM 950 weather, this is Eric Nelson. Tonight will be mostly clear with a low around 61. Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 87. A chance of thunderstorms very late on Friday night, which could continue into Saturday, which will have a high of 83 and a low of 68. Sunday will have highs in the mid-80s. The best regionally juried art fair for nearly three decades takes place August 4th, right in South Minneapolis, in picture-perfect Powderhorn Park. The Powderhorn Art Fair attracts artists from 26 states and 216 cities, making it a local and regional favorite. More information can be found at ppna.org.
Back AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Doug Padgett in your drive time. It's August 2nd on the calendar. If you're outside, it feels like a fall day. The climate has it's got a little sneaker for us here on this Thursday. And it's a good thing to talk about when talking with Steve Morris from the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. Hey, Steve.
Hello. How are you, Doug?
I'm good. Thank you, buddy. Thank you. Hey, I hear you on the show. I hear you on the station a lot, and it's my first time to get to interview you. So I'm appreciating you being on. Thanks so much. So, Steve, you guys are working on this issue of nitrate levels being high in drinking water around Minnesota.
Yeah, it's a thing that is actually rather shocking. You know, Minnesotans, I mean, as you know, Minnesotans highly value their water, and they
the thing about it is
most Minnesotans overwhelmingly think we're doing a great job of taking care of it, and that the state is just doing what they need to do. Local governments are doing what they need to do to keep our water healthy. Right, so we've been spending a lot of time over the last number of years, but it's really come more into the fore over the last few years as the Department of Ag is finally getting some testing done, more testing of our drinking water supplies, and moving forward with some new rules to try to do something about it.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. I mean, I live in Edina, and in the part of Edina we live in, we like brag about our water. And compared to other suburbs, you know what I mean? You're like, this tastes like Edina water. Like, we really do believe that. And so to read these statistics that I've been reading in this information, that the nitrate levels in the water in parts of our state are like at a really hazardous level. I have to tell you, I'm not a chemist, and I don't know a lot about things. I didn't even know what caused nitrates. I didn't know if it was one of those naturally occurring things in water and that we had to take out, or are we causing them? And so can you say a bit about that? Because it turns out that most of these nitrate problems are caused by the behavior of our lands and of people.
Right, by humans, exactly. Well, I mean, nitrates are naturally occurring, and there is a background level of nitrates that will oftentimes occur in water. It's my understanding, again, I'm not a chemist, but this is an issue I've been involved with for 30 years. But, you know, if you get, you know, you might have a few parts per million, maybe two, maybe three parts per million with background and just naturally occurring nitrogen to give you that nitrate level at that level.
Okay.
There has been a health standard that the EPA has used. I think it was set. It's set even pre-EPA. I think it was set in 1962. It was like one of the earliest water standards of 10 parts per million, after which pregnant women and babies, if you're consuming the water, it actually affects your ability to use oxygen. So actually, it's a respiratory syndrome. You get this blue baby syndrome, which is basically, you know, it's interrupting the use of the circulation of oxygen within the body.
Wow.
So it's pretty serious stuff. And you know what we're finding, you know, all around the state is, as we're doing this testing, is we have I think the correct number is now 30 communities that are up in the more than 5.4 parts per million, and we have a number of communities that are up over that legal threshold, the drinking safe drinking water threshold of over 10 parts per million. Yeah,
it's amazing. Yeah, and what's causing that? Is it primarily runoff from nitrogen being used in fertilizers? Is that?
Yeah. It's primarily excess nitrogen, and it's not that it's being overapplied per se, but it's commercial fertilizers that, especially in corn, leach through the soil. When you just grow corn the way we grow it on millions of acres across the state, corn is by its nature a very leaky crop. The nitrogen is not applied. The fertilizer is not applied.
You're such a name. So you're such a name caller.
Crop needs it. Pardon?
Yeah, you're such a name caller. Calling the corn leaky crop. I like that.
It is, and that's a term we actually use quite a bit. But so it's not an issue, and the reason I say that is because oftentimes people point a finger and say, "Well, this farmer's not doing it right, or this farmer's application's not right." Well,
I was about to do that.
I mean, even if farmers do exactly what the university recommends, corn is just inherently leaky, and we can only grow so much of it. And the real challenge is we have grown more and more of corn and soybeans that taken other crops off the landscape, so that it's like other things in our environment. We're overburdening. We're maxing out the capacity of our water to handle these types of crops. So, you know, we've taken pastures and other trees and forests off the landscape, and the ecosystem just can't keep up anymore. We've overwhelmed it.
Well, and one of the just to dwell a little longer on the negative problems of this, to read that if you boil this water that would have nitrate levels that are too high, rather than that purifying the water, it actually makes the nitrates more concentrated. So that's a real problem. You have to have like a reverse osmosis system or something to actually be protected from that.
Right, exactly. And they're very expensive systems. And so we have some cities that are having to put these reverse osmosis systems on their water plants.
Wow.
And they're very expensive to build and very expensive to operate. St. Peter, for example, spent many millions of dollars. Hastings and smaller communities don't even have the capacity to do that. And what's interesting is it's really a shift from agriculture to people who want to drink the water. You know, because these are costs that are created by our agricultural system, but yet, you know, the taxpayers in these communities and then the wells all across the state. We have some counties that as much as 50% of the wells that the Department of Ag has tested come in above the safe drinking water level. I mean, it's just crazy. So private wells. So if you're not on a public system like you are, and we have many thousands of these across the state, you know, these people are having to either do filtration or do their own reverse osmosis, or drill new wells. We had a farmer who was here last year. I think who was here earlier this year. She said she spent $20,000+ on a new well, just to be able to get into deeper water. And it's really not the solution, you know, to pollution. It's just to find some other source. The solution is to change your ways so you don't create it.
Well, as the executive director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership, you're not taking this sitting down. So what are you all suggesting that we do about this? What's the pathway forward here? If we got leaky corn and
Well, a couple of things. So the Department of Ag right now is doing their initial groundwater protection rule, which this is a law that they're just implementing this part of it. It was passed 29 years ago. I was actually the chief author of it. I said I've been working on this for a while, but back when I was in the Senate. And so they're doing this rule, which, you know, it's a good step forward. I would say it's a modest step, but it's an important step. It does start the department to restrict the use of some fertilizers in the fall in the highly vulnerable areas, and it allows them to do other practices around these communities with these elevated health, these elevated nitrate levels that are really a threat to public health. And so that's a good step, and you can go onto our website, and the comment period on that is open until August 15th. You can learn more about it and submit comments, and we encourage you to do that. I testified last week.
Does that help when people make those public comments? When I hear there's a public comment period, I think, oh, they're just not paying any attention to those public comments. But they actually do some good, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as someone who's worked in the public process for a long time, that public engagement is critical. You know, unfortunately, it isn't always individually rewarding to the person that makes it because they don't always get the response that they want. But, you know, if you don't do it, you know, just watch out for the direction things go because, you know, those people who want to pollute our waters and pollute our skies are always there at the table putting their comments in. So it's really important. It's really important. You know, the other solution I just want to touch on is more of a longer-term solution that we've been working on for quite a while here at Minnesota Environmental Partnership with a number of our groups, and that's really to develop this next generation of agricultural crops that, by their very design, aren't as leaky and polluting as corn, but are still profitable, provide income to farmers, but bring some diversity back into our landscape. You know how you always hear you should diversify your stock portfolio, right? Well, what's happened in agriculture is we have gotten our crop portfolio down to two crops, corn and soybeans.
Yeah,
they're really hard on the soil. They're really hard on pollinators. They're really hard on carbon release. They're really hard on habitat for wildlife. And so what we need is this next generation of crops that actually are designed, they're perennial crops or they're successive cover crops that keep something growing on the ground year-round. So just by the way they grow with their season-round growth, they protect the soil. They protect the water. They provide habitat and do all these wonderful things. And so, you know, and that's an important message because there are really powerful solutions. It's kind of like going from coal energy to going to solar, you know. And so, we're still in the industrial model of corn, soybeans, coal.
Yeah.
Kind of that same thing. And we need to get into this next generation of crops that is going to protect our soil and do all these things. And the University of Minnesota is doing great work coming up with these that we're supporting and promoting those and helping to get funding for those. But, you know, whenever I talk about the problems we have with nitrates, you know, what we can say is if we could put these perennial crops, these new crops that are just being released and have a lot of interest among some of the large food companies, if we could put these in these wellhead protection areas, they would go a long way in many instances, and maybe I can't say all, but in many or most instances, they would take care of the nitrate problem in those communities.
Because they would be filtering out, if they're in a wellhead area, they'd be filtering out before the nitrates can get into that water source.
Exactly. Well, think of it as filtering, but more accurately, it's just using the water. So that when the rain comes, there are crops there that use the water. So it doesn't have to filter anything. It just keeps it from migrating downward. Unnecessarily. And then what does go downward is cleaner. It's both.
Now, when you're describing this new generation of crops, are these genetically modified crops? Is that part of that conversation?
No. And that's a really good question. We get that a lot because, you know, it's done through traditional plant breeding at the University of Minnesota, just like we've, you know, I'm an old apple grower, the way they produced our apple crops and our new wine varieties and some of the early
other
farm crops.
Still feels like magic to me.
You know,
I don't really understand
that
either. But
they're accelerating it through using genomics, but it's only to look at traits, and then they do natural breeding and then figure out which ones they want and then rebreed them and rebreed them to get you the characteristics you hope to find. You select for the characteristics you want.
Wow, great. So you had mentioned that you worked on this Department of Agricultural rule back 29 years ago. I don't want to send you on a depressive journey here, but would you have ever thought 30 years ago that you would still have to be advocating as directly and hard as you are on these issues?
No. And it was 29 years ago that we passed the Groundwater Protection Act, and that authorized these rules. And so, and what happened is we went through a period that was in the latter years of the Perpich administration. And then we went into a 20-year hiatus of Republicans and independents that where we had Department of Agriculture leadership that just didn't want to move forward. It was like 20 years of a time warp where they did some educational efforts but really didn't advance in a meaningful way this part of the law. There are many other sections of the law that went forward, but this part that starts to actually hold farmers accountable and put in practices, requiring some change in practices, just went dormant for a generation.
Now the current
leadership in the department is really trying to get this done before they finish up at the end of the year.
Yeah, those Republicans were sort of the leaky crop of politicians, weren't they? and just think, there's one of them wants to come back and do that again. Tim Pawlenty wants to come back and get another crack at driving all this. Just maddening.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was 8 of those years, and really nothing happened as far as moving this rule forward.
Yeah, it's just a bad Freddy Krueger sequel to me. That guy coming back.
There you go.
Terrorize the land. Well, that's Steve Morse. Steve has been doing great work, as you know, for more than 3 decades, and now at the executive director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. Really great to talk with you today. Thanks for this, and thanks for all the work you do.
You bet. And you can always go to mepartnership.org for more information. Good talking with you.
There you go. You're a professional. Mepartnership.org. You should go there and find out what's going on. I'm Doug Padgett. We'll be back here after the break on AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Hi, everybody. Make plans to attend the one and only Powderhorn Art Fair on Saturday and Sunday, August 4th and 5th, in the heart of South Minneapolis and picture-perfect Powderhorn Park. Experience and purchase original artwork from more than 230 artists. Spend time with your family and friends creating your own work of art at over 6 art stations. And don't forget to grab a bite to eat from over 25 different food trucks. So join us on Saturday, August 4th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. or Sunday, August 5th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. or both. The Powderhorn Art Fair is proudly brought to you by Powderhorn Park Neighborhood Association in collaboration with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board with a generous gift from the Metropolitan Regional Art Council. Again, join us for over 230 artists, 25 food trucks, and 6 arts experiences on August 4th and 5th. So we'll see you there at one of the most local art fairs around.
Hi, Gregory Rich, host of AM 950's Drinkin' the Style. Are you a fan of cool? Then let me introduce you to Gus Modern. Available exclusively in the Twin Cities at Habitation Furnishing and Design, Gus Modern is kind of mid-century, kind of contemporary, and 100% cool. Timeless, comfortable, awesome, and through August 19th, 20% off. Visit GusModern.com or stop in at Habitation at 4317 Excelsior Boulevard and check it out.
Lowry Hill Meats, your neighborhood full-service butcher shop that works directly with family farms. Using whole animals gives Lowry Hill Meats the benefit of preparing custom cuts and dry aging. They offer beef, lamb, goat, pork, and poultry, including whole duck, roasting hens, turkey, quail, pheasant, and Cornish hens. Their sausages are made fresh in-house weekly using 40 rotating recipes. Try their handcrafted sandwiches. They are second to none. Lowry Hill Meats is located at 1934 Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis or online at lowryhillmeats.com.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 on Monday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. This Monday, our theme is the intersection between religion and idealism. The interview will be with Busho Lang, a Zen Buddhist teacher who will talk about how cracking our hearts open can lead to seeking to right injustice in the world. I've got a vision of a better world where everyone has a place at the table. Ellie 2.0, engaging in real on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, friends. I've been talking to you about Minnesota's first green cemetery, Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. It's an entirely new way of looking at our last earthly step. Burials are designed to have as little impact on the environment as possible. For many of us, a continuation of the commitment we made during our lifetime. Let me suggest you go to the website, mngreengraves.com. Explore what it is. Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. It's a lovely place, a peaceful place. Minnesota's first green cemetery.
AM
Good afternoon. Welcome back to AM 950. You're listening to that station. Did you know that? Because you either told it to your smart speaker, which I hope you do sometime. Yeah, I have to say it quietly because I have one in the room here, so I have to whisper Alexa's name, or she starts listening in. Or maybe you could say it to your Google thing or whatever you've got going that keeps track of your audio and your things in your house. If you have one of those yet, you can tell it to play AM 950 KTNF and just keep saying some set of sentences about that, depending on which device you're using, and it'll create that for you. It's actually pretty neat. Hey, you know what's not pretty neat? The President of the United States. Here's my President Donald Trump rant for the day. Makes me feel better. Hope it makes you feel encouraged. I realize today that the president is not only at odds with the people of this country, he's not only at odds with the Constitution, he's not only at odds with the great majority of the world, he's not only at odds with himself, which he is, which I think is the root of all this. Like if I was going to be a therapy partner with him, I was going to give him a little pastoral counseling and suggest to him that he needs to like himself a little more. I'd say, you know, that old golden rule about love your neighbor as you love yourself. It's got to start with loving yourself. So you see somebody being mean to other people, you often have your finger on what's going on. And he is at odds with his own administration, this guy. Here's the thing. The rest of the administration's gone rogue. All the people that work in the cabinets, I mean, I think most of them are incompetent for their jobs, but the long-termers, the lifers, the deep state, as they like to call them, the people who do this professionally and not just as a reality TV show with a 4-year season run, they're just doing what they want anyway. And when the president says something, then they just say, no, that's not the way it is. The president will say, you know, hey, here's our policy on Russia. Secretary of State says, nah, that's not it. Trump says, you know, yeah, I'll meet with Iran no matter what. No, there'll be conditions. Everybody's just sort of following along like he's some dawdling character. And in this case, though, it's actually dangerous because I think what's going on is we don't have a functional president who's working with his administration. What we have is a stand-in that's creating nonsense and disaster, and people have to come around and clean it up. That's why you'll hear Republicans say all the time, I support his policies, but not him. Let's get rid of him then. You don't need the guy dawdling around, ruining the Constitution, offending the country, randomly starting policies that put kids into separation containment spaces from their parents. It's outrageous. It is totally outrageous. There's a thing going on over in Hopkins on Excelsior Boulevard. And over there in Hopkins, there's this big asphalt test going on. They're taking a mile of Excelsior Boulevard. And they're putting down different kinds of asphalt to see how it behaves. One of the kinds of asphalt, I didn't think I'd ever be intrigued by reading an article about asphalt, but it's pretty asphalt great. What they're doing, the people who work on roads, partnering with those kids over at Cargill, who just got their fingers in everything, including your asphalt. Well, that came out really odd. I didn't think that whole sentence all the way through. They've got their fingers in everything, including your asphalt. But they do have their fingers in the asphalt over there on Excelsior Boulevard, because what they figured out how to do, this is fascinating and I think fantastic. They've created a bio-based additive out of like vegetable oil. And they rip up the asphalt that's on the road. And if you've ever seen them do this, like if you drive down Interstate 35, you'll see just piles of rubble. You know, it's unbelievable, right? Just south of downtown on 35W, the piles of rubble, and they have to get rid of all that. Well, what they're doing over here on Excelsior Boulevard in Hopkins, they're digging up the asphalt. Then they're mixing it back together, the old used asphalt, injecting it with this bio-based additive, and it makes it a little bit more flexible. And then they're laying it back down, and they think it's going to last without cracking. Digging up the old asphalt, injecting it with a bio-based additive, and then laying it back down. And then another part of the road, of this mile stretch, they're just doing the old-timey stuff where they're using asphalt mix and with stone and sand and gravel. And then they're going to compare sort of how the two go. Here's where these two stories connect together. That's the metaphor for me today about thinking about the Trump administration. You got to dig that thing up, crunch it all up, inject it with a little Democrat progressivism, and lay it back down in another 4 years, another 2.5 years. That's what we got to do. So we got to keep our minds. Sure, it's broken and it's horrible and we can hardly get over it, but we're going to dig it back up. We're going to inject it with something of that makes it much more usable and good and fixable. And we're going to fix those roads with the very same asphalt that are on the roads right now. That's what we're going to have to do, because the president is out of his league. He's out of his authority. He is, frankly, out of his mind. And that's something I think we have to do. Hey, Gary, I've got some thoughts over on Fort Snelling. You know, I was thinking, Gary, honestly, I was thinking about you because I know you're a regular caller and I appreciate so much how you call. And I'm thinking, I bet Gary knows things about Fort Snelling because you strike me as a guy who knows
Fort Snelling.
Well,
first I want to say something about Pawlenty. You know, we always got to sacrifice to help out, pity those billionaires to help them out, the upper 1%. So
remember,
Pawlenty was going to take away our rent credit and he cut education for us and stuff so we could sacrifice so we could help out them poor billionaires. But what I was going to say about what she said about Fort Snelling, you know, my father was attached the last 6 months in Italy, an Italian friend to the 442nd, the Japanese Americans. They were all volunteers, and they would take the high mountains, and you saw them go up those mountains like mountain goats. They were the best we had. They were the most decorated outfit in World War II, and they had the most losses. If you remember Daniel Inouye from Hawaii, the senator, that
sure,
was
yeah,
most, he was
stories.
The most famous of all of them.
Yeah,
U.S. senator from Hawaii. But anyway, I just wanted to let you know that. He was also attached to a black outfit, and they were good fighting men, too. A lot of the black outfits had trouble because they had the terrible thing of having white officers. A lot of them were Southerners, so you can imagine how racist it was.
Oh,
so thank
gosh.
You.
Yeah, Gary, thanks. I really appreciate your call. A lot went on in the past in this country, and as Gary brings up and as Melanie brought up in the earlier part of the hour, that we don't know about. There's these deep, rich stories, these deep, rich histories. We're living in one of those periods now. This is the time, 2018, 2019, 2020. These are the years that people are going to talk about what we did in our politics, what we did locally, what we did nationally, what we did at the state level, what we did at the federal level. They're going to ask because it's going to matter. Are we going to be able to dig up that old asphalt and inject it with something that's going to make it more useful? Can we save the stories so that the little Garys of today can look back and tell stories about what their grandfathers did, their grandmothers did? Can we look back and look on this period as a time when it was time to rise up, to seek the common good, to do something about it, and to turn up the volume all the way around? And I just want to encourage people that there's an election coming next Tuesday in this state, or a week from Tuesday, and you need to be engaged in that one. And then there's an election coming on November 6th, Tuesday, November 6th. Now, there's only once every 170 days that in our constitutional setup, we actually get to do something to impact the people who represent us. And that's one of those days. One of them is coming a week from Tuesday, and one of them is coming on November 2nd. This is a time for you to rise up, count your vote, support someone, and do something about making the kind of world you want to live in. I'm Doug Padgett. This is AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And we'll be back with you tomorrow. Enjoy your Thursday.